You're listening to the Reinvest Podcast, where each Tuesday we will show you how to reclaim, reconnect, and refocus your life by bringing you the top real estate professionals in the industry. We'll pull back the curtain so you can implement these tools and tactics to build generational wealth. Your hosts, Garrett Gatton and Seth Simonillo. Hey, Reinvest listeners. Thank you for joining in for episode 46 of the Reinvest Podcast. Seth and I, we get to do the fun stuff. We get to show you how to maximize your life through the power of real estate. You know, I was thinking right now, a lot of changes have happened in the last 12 months. Definitely a different market than a lot of us got started in real estate, especially if you just started in the last 5 years. And I was thinking about when everything's get turned up, when the heat gets turned up, it's all about fundamentals, right? Because anybody can invest in real estate in an up market and look good, but when the tide goes out, you kind of see who was swimming without their shorts on. So I want to give you the three immutable laws of real estate investing. Number one, secure long-term debt with fixed rate debt. Number two, invest for cash flow. And number three, have adequate cash reserves.
I concur.
Yeah. Give your stamp of approval on that. Well, I was thinking the other day, Ken McElroy, who's been through a lot of different markets, he has been touting those immutable laws of real estate investing. And it's kind of like there's a lot of strategies out there, but now
it makes sense.
Now it makes sense, right? So, you know, I guess all that to say is, you know, look those up, you know, live by those. Those will never go away in terms of their reliability to invest along those parameters. And then also listen to people who have been through market cycles and are not, you know, just brand new and started 6 months ago. So anyway.
Good words. So today we got a special guest on. We have Don Spafford. Don, how you doing?
Doing great. Thank you.
Good. Where are you located at?
So I live in Idaho Falls, Idaho.
Probably nice. A place you've
most likely never heard of. I don't know. It's southeast Idaho. It's a great area, like an hour and a half from Yellowstone Park. Nice. We got mountains around us. Nice atmosphere. Nice people. So a good place to be.
Idaho Falls.
Yeah, Idaho Falls. That's different than Twin Falls in Idaho, though, right?
Right. It's about 2 hours away. Yeah.
Okay. I've been to Twin Falls, so I was close.
Reminds me of Radiator Springs from Cars.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, it's good to have you with us today. So I'm just going to let you tell your story. Why don't you just give us kind of a background of who you are, first of all, and then go all the way back to the beginning and how you got your start in real estate and what you do before real
estate. How you got your start in life as a baby. I want you to go that far.
Yeah, I can go that far. All right. So first of all, yeah, thanks for having me again. My name is Don Spafford. I am a partner with Beyonder Holdings. We are a outdoor hospitality deal sponsor. So what that means is we purchase RV resorts, campgrounds, and marinas across the country. And we provide those through a syndication model, as most people are probably familiar with, and provide great return back to our investors. And later we'll get into why I got into that, kind of going back to your points of the immutable laws of real estate, right? So kind of going back a bit. So I did grow up most of my life around Omaha, Nebraska. I moved here to Idaho in 2015 for family reasons to help take care of my mother. But my background was in finance. I was actually studying to become a financial advisor or, a wealth manager, that type of person, or even a portfolio manager, all things relating to stocks. And the year I finally finished, I had to go to school part-time, was raising a family, and I finally got done spring of 2008. By fall of 2008, most of those financial companies were out of business.
Wow.
What a time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Great time for all that. That kind of made me, analyze my life goals and what I was intending to do. Because at this point, I felt like, hey, there was what I wanted to do is no longer safe. I saw this as now a thing I have no control on. I didn't want to go and luckily I was already at a company working in that space, so I had a secure job. But if I would have went to a different job to kind of pursue that career, I would have now been the new guy, most likely the first one to get laid off. So I didn't want to have that happen. So I kind of hunkered down where I was at and stayed there to at least have a secure job. But I realized that, yeah, this is not that cool, So as especially if I was at that point where I was managing people's wealth, and all of a sudden now they've lost, everything. I'm like, I'm going to feel bad about it, even though it's more or less out of my control. I can't control the markets or what's going on, but I would still feel responsible, and I didn't want to have that kind of weight weighing down on me. So So with all that happening, I kind of just got depressed a little bit actually first. Yeah. But what I did instead is, as I was looking for jobs that were available at the time that are in that space, the closest thing to anything finance related was accounting. So I was like, well, I can go back and get an accounting degree. Sure, why not? And become a CPA. It's close enough, almost the same thing. But so I went and actually got the accounting degree, started straight to the CPA exam.
Yeah, you must like numbers.
Yeah. And that's always been, math and science were always, of course, my two strong points in school. I love both of them. Ideally, I probably should have just been a physicist because that's what I actually like more. But what a reason I chose business. So I went back, got this accounting degree, started studying for the CPA exam, but then realized I didn't like accounting. It just wasn't what I really wanted to do. And so I never took the exam. But so during this time, around maybe 2010, 11, somewhere there now, we had three children, one on the way. So the three that we had were now all in school. So my wife had always been a stay-at-home mom since the day we got married. Basically, we went on, that was our plan. But now she was like, okay, she got some free time. No need to stay around at home all day. So she wanted to work, but at the same time, we want her to have something flexible so that she can be around when the kids are sick or obviously during summer to not have to be worrying about daycare and all that kind of stuff. So somehow the idea came up from me to her to say, what about going to real estate, be a real estate agent? She researched it. She liked the idea. She likes working with people and talking to people. And of course, it gives her that flexibility to pretty much have her own business, more or less. So she liked that. Got her license, started in real estate around 2011. And some of her very first clients were investors, friends of ours that were buying properties in cash in Omaha, Nebraska, essentially doing the BRRRR process, which I think people are familiar with what that means by now. But so they were buying the properties in cash and then rehabbing them, refinancing. To me, that was just like mind blowing. I was like, wow, you can do that? That's pretty cool. I didn't know you could do that. And of course, these people that were doing it had a business they were leveraging for a line of credit, which I did not have. So I didn't have access to, $200,000 to do that with anyway, but it was just still impressive that the idea, the concept you could do that.
Yeah, that was in your mind. Helps when interest rates were lower.
yeah, for sure. And the prices were lower too. So still, coming out of that market crash, so houses were still like, half off. But anyway, so that's what got me more interested. And I started wanting to learn more about real estate. So I started reading some books. The first book I read was the Millionaire Real Estate Investor by Gary Keller. Kind of learned about kind of like the processes and things about
that.
Was she
with Keller Williams when she was an agent?
At the time, she was not. She was with a local company in Omaha in that area called NP Dodge. Now she's we're here in Idaho. She's with Keller Williams. Essentially, I was looking for the book for her, that the Millionaire Real Estate Agent. And then the other one, the investor, came up like, that's interesting. So I bought both, got the agent one for her and the investor one for me. So I'd go with her to show houses and I'd sit there and read, while I'm waiting. So to get to the point where we're ready to figure out a way to do it and to buy our first property. There's a lot of, at the time, still lots of foreclosures that you could buy very cheap.
Was this like 2012 or?
Yeah, around there. Probably 2012, 2013, so somewhere in that range. As we were getting kind of motivated to take that next step and do something, is also the same time we decided we needed to move from Omaha to Idaho. My mother was getting more further along with MS that she was going through at the time. We knew that she's going to need more care, so we wanted to be there to help take care of her. So I kind of put all that on hold because I didn't want to have a long-distance property. I wasn't ready for that yet. So I said, let's just wait. Let's move to Idaho first, and then we'll figure that out. So I kind of just put all that on hold, got our own house fixed up and ready to get it sold, came to Idaho. And then after being here about a year or so, got settled in. And then that's when I got more motivated again. I wanted to figure something out, started talking to the lenders and different people in the areas to kind of figure out, what options are available. Discovered Bigger Pockets, actually. Did not know them before that, but I actually went to a local, not a local, I'd say, but one of those traveling guru seminars coming through town, right? I saw a commercial. I went to that just to see what's going on. Met a guy there who introduced me to Bigger Pockets. And so I came home and discovered what it was. I had no idea. Just the name sounds like, is it like a private lender place or what? But
it's a rabbit hole. So I started, time
yeah,
and resources,
I started listening to their podcasts and their webinars and I was like, wow, this is pretty cool. Put up their calculators. So I got on there and that was, and I'll start this also saying I was completely nowhere to be found on social media. I did not have a Facebook account, never wanted one. I did have a LinkedIn, but it was mostly just for my coworkers. You know, I had about 300 connections on there just from coworkers and things. So other than that, I had no social media. So BiggerPockets became my social media platform. I started being active there on the forums and commenting and posting and helping answer questions, all that kind of stuff over time. But anyway, so it was on there that I discovered two things that was able to help me get that first property. One was that I found out, again, through a forum post that there is a local lender in this area that does 10% down payments for investment properties. So don't need to have 25%, as most people would think. And two, I realized that, or I found out that I could take a loan from my 401k. So I did not necessarily have to have the money in savings. I had access to the money through my 401k. So I used those two things combined to essentially get that first property, which I bought was a fourplex. At the time I bought here in 2017. So just almost 6 years now when I close on it. Yeah. And that's what really got started. So if it weren't for that, that 10% down payment option and having access to capital in my 401k, I would not have probably even been able to start at that point. I did not have enough savings.
Is that lender still doing 10% down?
They are actually. Yes.
Oh, whoa. Can I have their number?
Yeah. It sounds like a good product.
Sure. No, I, yeah, I yeah. Wanna, let me, well, let me pause what's, your what's real great quick about here. It.
Yeah.
1 second. I want to comment just to be able to kind of interject along the way for people who are listening. You had made the comment earlier about the client that your wife was working with. They had a line, you know, a business line of credit or something that they were investing from to do the BRRRR strategy. And at the time you didn't have access to capital, but later, you know, you were able to use what you did have through a 401k, maybe through some capital set aside. And you got creative and made that work for you in the way of an investment. You know, we were talking about some home equity lines of credit on some investment properties that we have. And just talk about how you were even able to leverage just recently with some of those.
Yeah, I had a property that I bought in 2020. So my interest rate on it was super low. And I went and remodeled. It was a duplex, remodeled both sides. But obviously, with a 2.78% interest rate, I wasn't going to refinance and pull any of my money out. So I just went ahead and got a HELOC because I was living in one side. So I was house hacking it, living in one side, renting out the other. Got a HELOC with some good terms that gave me a long draw period of 10 years and, you know, had some working capital. So that was my way to leverage the work and the sweat equity that I had in my duplex without refinancing, lose my interest rate. And then I used that HELOC and bought my next two properties with it. So,
and so, I mean, even if you're listening, if you don't have a home equity line of credit right now, go talk to your bank that's got your mortgage. Sometimes the bank that holds your note for your house will let you leverage up a little bit more on an equity line of credit. And that may be your way to get started on your first investment property. But, I think that's cool. Otherwise it's opportunity cost, right? You have to pass up on opportunities because you don't have access to capital. But you made that work for you in your fourplex and at a good time, right? So were you able to, I mean, putting 10% down 2017 on a quadplex, you were probably able to still see quite a bit of appreciation, even though you had leveraged up quite a bit on it, right?
Yeah. Lots of appreciation. I mean, what was good at the time is this was, you know, technically an off market. It was a for sale by owner that I found actually on Craigslist. At the time it met the 1% rule. I knew the rents were under market. So there, I saw a huge opportunity here, and it was a newer product. It wasn't like a 1960s fourplex. This was built in 1996. You know, so I was like, hey, it's new enough that I have no issues with plumbing and electrical and that kind of stuff. And
Seth was born in 96.
So I pulled that trigger, but I'll be honest. And I've told people this before is I was deathly afraid. Like the night before closing, even I was like, maybe we should just back out. Cause this was, you know, a big step. My first property, I didn't know what to expect. Things could totally blow up my face again. I had no fallback on it. You know, no runway of cash in case something were to go horribly wrong. My best case scenario was take another loan for my 401k to cover any major expense if it came up, right? But luckily none of that happened. But I knew that for me, I was like, I've got to take that risk. It was the only solution to the problem I had to get to where I wanted to be and get started, get things going. So the time I think I bought that fourplex for about 270,000 approximately.
Wow.
It's probably now worth about 600,000. I mean, I did do a refinance on it a year and a half ago. But I did a cash out refi because when I did buy it, I think I got like a 5.25% interest rate.
How much did you pull out?
Over 100,000. Nice. I could have pulled out much more, but I wanted to keep the cash flow where it was at. So I wanted to make sure I maintained the cash flow on that property because I still want it
free, baby.
By itself to you know, produce. So yeah, so now it produces, of course, infinite returns from that cash refi, but it's still producing about 1,200 a month anyway. But I've taken that, you know, 100,000, reinvested it into other things, right? To keep it going and growing.
That's awesome.
Right? Before that, but long ago before that, I did do a HELOC on it. I did find a lender that would do a HELOC on investor properties, and I did pull out a small HELOC at the time to do some private lending and, you know, get some stuff from that too. So anyway, but moving on. That's what got the ball rolling and that momentum started. Literally, once I got past that fear, and what helped me get past that fear was just looking at the numbers again. It's like, okay, I trusted my numbers. I trusted the analysis. I was like, okay, this is going to work. It cash flows as is day one. At least, you know, not great, but enough that I could pay back that 401k loan you know, could sustain itself, pay the mortgage, everything else is paid. And I knew that over time, that's going to just get better. So I got past that fear and we closed. Like the next day, I was like, you know, the floodgates were open. I was ready to go buy more properties and keep things going. So fast forward, you know, some time, I bought a couple more fourplexes, this time out of state, and got involved with some development projects. Eventually got with the team that does build to rent multifamily. Eventually now landed with Beyonder Holdings that buys, of course, these RV campgrounds. Kind of a, you know, short synapse of what happened, but over the course of just a few years, you know, I went from starting with literally nothing to building up these portfolio and net worth and being now full-time real estate.
That's awesome.
And you just recently left your W-2 job and went full-time in December. So talk about that. Was that another kind of like fear factor that you, I just came up with that fear factor.
They should make a show about that or something.
You know who I would cast as the Joe Rogan, Joe freaking Rogan. that was a 90s reference. That was like early 2000s. Yeah. Talk about the psychology of like, okay, I'm leaving my W-2, I'm going full-time in real estate. Because anytime you're doing that, you probably don't have a surplus to do that. You know what I mean? It's going to be tight for a minute talk about that.
Yeah. So when I bought that first property, that fourplex, I gave myself a goal that within 5 years, I want to at least have the option to leave my job. That was the ultimate end goal of starting anyway. So coming up in December, it was, you know, essentially 5.5 years since that point. During that year, like early 2022, I guess, when I was ramping things up with Beyonder Holdings, being much more active, you know, of course, being on podcasts and just talking to the investors and all these things I was doing, on top of my job, I just felt like my days were just being consumed. Like, you know, I knew, of course, it was a sacrifice I had to make to get to where I wanted to be. But there's also a limit. You know, I don't want to like totally cut off my family and other, you know, responsibilities I have. So I was like, I tried to balance as best I could. I would do like, you know, podcasts during my lunch hour. You'd go to, you know, I'd reserve some time in the day to take phone calls and things. It was stressful for sure. So during the year, as I got busier and busier and we were growing and doing more with Beyonder, I realized that I would not be able to keep up doing both long term. It would just, I would burn myself out and would not be a healthy situation. So it came to the point where I had to decide, okay, do I want to pursue the possibilities that can come with being full-time real estate or stick with the safe, secure job and just deal with it and kind of try to still grow the real estate stuff slowly on the side. Ultimately I decided I've got to take that risk and again, kind of just buying that first property, I got to take that leap of faith and just trust that it's going to all work out and dive in. Cause I was able, as I saw that, all the things I was able to do while I was holding a job, I was like, I would expect that I could now multiply that even more when I have more time to dedicate to it.
Right.
So I decided, you know, it's worth taking that risk. But in order for that to happen, of course, I've got to think my family first and before myself. So my wife and I talked about some things that we had to have checked off, like things that must be done before I can say I can leave my job. And one of those things was to have a 1 year of expenses in a savings account. So the minimum, you know, what it's going to cost to pay our mortgage or, you know, our bills, our food, you know, that kind of stuff is basic living expenses for 1 year. If I have that set aside in a savings account that we can live off of, then let's do it and go for it. So, Luckily, I was able to make that happen as some things came through for some of these development projects, built to rent projects that I was in that were able to pay out right around that time. I said, okay, I'm going to set this aside. As much as I want to reinvest it and keep it growing, I got to put it aside. Right. Having savings, you know, for worst case scenario situation. So the day that was in the account and there, I submitted my resignation letter to my employer. I said, they all kind of knew it was coming. That they know I was involved in real estate for a while, and I've kind of joked about it in the past. So they kind of knew it was coming. Just weren't sure when. Obviously, they wanted me to stay out. I was there for almost 20 years, you know. So it was kind of a big change for me and for them. I had to do it. You know, it's one of the things that just I had to do because I felt like also if I continued, I was almost kind of feeling like I was robbing from my job because I was not focused. I was trying to, you know, answer emails here and there as I was trying to work and things. So it's once I had that runway in place, okay, I'm going to take that risk and pull the trigger. Of course, looking back now, maybe I should have waited because the first quarter has been definitely really slow. And as we're all kind of familiar with what's happening in the market these days, right. You know, the first quarter of 2023 has been a lot of fear in the market just for things that are happening with interest rates and the economy and foreclosures and everything's going on. So that's been affecting us for sure as far as the investor confidence to do anything. But I feel that that's turning around now and starting to pick up a bit. And I'm hoping in the next few months it'll get better as people realize that the world's not ending and people can start investing again.
We're all still here. Yeah. So let's jump in on the RV park stuff, the RV resorts. Why RV resorts? You know, what? Yeah. Why'd you choose that? Why'd you partner with the guys that had founded Beyonder Holdings?
Yeah. So going back to the immutable laws you mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, cash flow, right? That was like one of the things is it has to cash flow in day one. And that was for me, any of the properties I did on my own, that was part of my analysis. Like that first fourplex, the other properties I bought, they all cash flowed well, like high cash on cash, especially, I guess it helps when you have a high leverage, but I had, 30, 40% cash on cash returns on those properties. Of course, now infinite returns on the one, but as I was early, I'd say, I guess 2021, as I was getting more involved in multifamily, trying to get involved with commercial real estate, multifamily syndications and all that, the playing field of the market was just kind of crazy. Like it seems like everybody was out there trying to do deals, make deals happen, put deals out there. Probably people that should have no business doing it were in there, which is probably part of the problems we're seeing now. These foreclosures are happening. But for me, so I was searching for properties. There were even not some fourplexes. There were properties I would make offers on myself and just get bid, like just insanely outbid. I was like, who's buying these things that they're not going to cash flow at that price? But as I was doing more, trying to find some like smaller multifamily, like maybe a 20 or 30 unit that I could do a JV deal with some people that had some cash that were willing to JV with me, the numbers for me just weren't penciling out good enough that I would feel comfortable asking them to invest in. So I was looking for bigger properties. Okay, maybe I go find 100, 150 unit that I could take to a syndication group get my foot in the door with them and just be a co-GP with a deal I could find. But kind of same situation. I was not finding anything that was really cash flowing well. So I was kind of started giving up on that. Maybe I don't have the resources to find these great deals or whatever. So let me just look for an opportunity where I can invest as an LP investor possibly. So I was looking at other syndications that were being sent out. I was honestly kind of a bit shocked that I was just seeing about the same numbers I was seeing before on my own. I'm like, these are still not great cash flowing properties. These are, maybe a 4 to 6%, average cash on cash. I'm like, that's not that great. I was willing to just like, I might as well keep looking for fourplexes or something that I can get higher return on or something. Right. I know a lot of them were more banking on that equity multiple. After 5 years, you'd get a big return at the end, which even then was only about a 2x multiple. So I'm like, that's really not super great for 5 years either. So I was kind of just holding off for something better. It's like, there's gotta be something else out there that I've not seen yet. I've looked in, of course, self-storage, mobile home parks, and all those things. As I was almost to the breaking point of just saying, okay, maybe there's nothing else. So I'll just put my money somewhere, at least get my money working for me. I was during this entire time, of course, as I was working my W-2 in the last, 6 years, I was involved with real estate, I've been listening to podcasts. As I mentioned, Bigger Pockets was one of them. So I would just sit here while working all day, listening to podcasts, at least probably 4 to 6 podcasts per day, through bigger pockets and other sources. And one day on one of these podcasts, I heard somebody else mention these RV campgrounds. And it was something that was kind of curious to me because it was something different I never heard of before.
Right.
As I mentioned, I'm in Southeast Idaho. It's a big camping area. Most of my neighbors have RVs. Just about every house here has an RV pad on it for the parking lot. So, or sorry, the driveway. So,
interesting.
So I was like, there could be something here that, that I've not thought about before, an untapped niche possibly. So I started going to these, webinars and, you know, connecting with people that are in that space just to get to know more about it, kind of get my foot in the door and learn more. My initial intention or thought was that if I could find somebody that wants to buy in this area, buy something around Yellowstone, I could, you know, be their boots on the ground. I could go take videos and pictures. My wife could help with the purchase and kind of just get my foot in the door, give me 1% of the deal and I can do what I can to help. And so in doing that, as I was, you know, networking on social media with different people, of course, by this time, as I said before, I was not anywhere on social media, but now I was getting active on LinkedIn and going to different meetup events and all these networking groups. So I was getting to know people. And so so in all that, I was commenting on posts, and somehow either one of my partners either saw mine or I saw his, and we chatted with each other there. Then we got in a call and kind of, so we started discussing now what they were doing. So this, I met, you know, Adam Lendy, one of the founding partners with Justin Hoggett of Beyonder Holdings, you know, back then called Happy Camper Capital. So we got in a call just kind of discussing what they were doing, where they were going, what their vision was for the future for this space. And of course, I talked about my goals and what I was looking for. I was trying to find partners. I was trying to find deals. I was trying to find a place to invest and get high returns. So they had just closed on their first property not too long before that. And they knew that they needed to grow their team and expand and to kind of complete the vision they had for where they saw this going. They need to have the right people in place to make that happen. And so as we discussed, luckily for me, I was just timing or fate, what do you want to call it? Everything seemed to align and work out right because I was searching, they were searching. So they invited me to join with them. So for me, it was, a little bit of I guess unexpected shock, I guess, because I was like, you know, what have I got to offer? I mean, I don't really know anything about this space. Right. But they did see, of course, my financial background and the drive and the passion I had for what I was looking to do. So for me, from my perspective, I was looking at, okay, I was mostly involved with everything multifamily. I had just joined a multifamily mastermind group. So I kind of felt like, if now I tell everybody I'm doing this RV stuff, are they going to look at me like, you know, how can we trust you if you're flip-flopping or, you know, you're not multifamily, so we can't, you know, we're not anything you'd talk about.
Get out of the group.
Yeah, exactly. Get out of the group. I was like, I'll be kicked out of this mastermind group. But I was like, you know what? Who cares? I was like, I'm in this for me, not for them. So if I saw this as, you know, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, am I going to look back and regret not taking this chance? Right. So I was looking at everything that I was seeing the last, you know, year or two in multifamily, you know, the numbers were getting tighter or the deals were getting slimmer. I was like, is that going to get any better in the next few years? I don't know. But this campground space, an untapped niche that could possibly just completely explode. I was like, looking back, I was like, this is kind of like, self-storage and mobile home parks right. 5 years ago. And it was just starting to get traction and getting talked about. Right. And all of a sudden it blew up and everybody's doing it. So I was like, okay, this is possibly that the beginning point again for this space.
Yeah.
So I'm like, 5 years from now, I don't want to look back and say, why didn't I take that chance? You know,
right.
So I was like, what have I got to lose? Let me go for it and see what happens. If it works out, great. If it doesn't work out, at least I won't regret not trying.
Yeah. So you've jumped into the RV park resort. So why don't you just a little bit pull back the curtain? What does that mean? Are you renting out the spaces or the pads? You mentioned you guys even do some arenas. Why don't you go ahead and pull back the curtain? How do you make money doing that? What's kind of the strategy on a high level? And then what are some pros and cons of doing that? What's kind of the risk associated with it?
Sure, no problem. So what we do is essentially, you know, if you're familiar with the value add multifamily, it's essentially kind of the same idea. We do a value add on these campgrounds, but it's not simply, you know, replacing carpets and painting and putting in appliances. You know, these are what we buy is these RV resorts, first of all, that we could just buy them and hold them turnkey and they'd still cash flow great. Again, this is, you know, going back to your immutable laws, this is what the reason I got into the space, what attracted me to it was the return, the cash flows. And I can get into that here in a minute, but so we look for an existing property, typically with at least about 100 existing campsites. That's could be a mixture of, you know, RV, possibly cabins, glamping options, even dry tent camping sites, you know, things like that. So we have at least 100 existing campsites, and then within about a 2-hour drive of a major city. So typically these are not going to be within the city limit. These are, you know, a bit outside. So what these are to, just to clarify, it's not an RV park, or these are not, you know, trailer park type of dilapidated properties. These are like high-end vacation resorts. So people go here to have a great time, spend some money having fun, and then they go back home. So people don't live there. These are like basically to put it simple, it's like a short-term rental at a multifamily scale.
Yeah. Are there anybody that does stay there long-term? I mean, any of your parks, or is it all just short-term stuff?
So we may have some what we call seasonal campers that might stay for like during winter or summer months, but they're typically not there year round. So they don't like live there, right? So you might get some of like the snowbird people that go south for winter and, you know, all that. But that's really about it, honestly. So with that, you know, people are similar to like a short-term rental or a hotel. People prepay to come there. They have to make the reservations oftentimes, you know, 6 months or more in advance because they get filled up, especially around holidays and weekends. But part of why we specifically target that about 2-hour drive of a major city, this was, of course, way before gas prices were high. But we anticipated, you know, if gas prices were to go high, people that have an RVs are not going to want to take a cross-country trip, you know, and then this big rig that gets, you know, 6 miles per gallon or something. So if you have one, you of course want to use it. So most people are willing to drive a couple hours to go out and have fun and you know, and use it often they can. So being close to the major metro area, you get those built-in users that are going to come out as often as possible on weekends and whatever to fill it up. So what we do for our value add, though, is typically we're looking for a few different things. Preferably one is we have additional land where we can expand. So we can take, you know, the 100 or 150 or so existing campsites and add on more. We can build out another, you know, 30 or 50 or 100 campsites. We can add on additional amenities. So there may be already some basic stuff there, like a camp store and a swimming pool, maybe, but we can add on now a water park or, an ATV track or something, you know, something to attract people to come there and have fun for other things. Put on a concert venue. One of our properties, like we're currently right now building in a amphitheater to do concert events at the site. And then, of course, some of the basic stuff is just the general thing to get people there. So most of these properties are what we call, of course, mom and pop. Where the owners are the operators. They live there on site, typically running it themselves, doing the job of, you know, 4 to 5 people. But they're on their own. They typically don't have a very attractive, good website. They typically only take like phone call reservations. So they're really limiting their resources of what they can really do to just amplify the profitability of the property. So by coming there, just to, first of all, giving a great website that people can find, putting in online reservations with dynamic pricing, which means that the prices will change depending on how filled up it is or the time of year or whatever. So just doing those basic things is going to increase the revenue of the property by at least 5%. Because particularly, I mean, these days, most people don't want to make a phone call to make a reservation. Anyway, if they can't do it online, they'll go to one that can. Right. As of right now, the current largest new RVers or new campers are millennials and Gen Z. So a large percentage of them are typically those ones that don't want to make a phone call, right? So it has to be online. So that's just, again, some basic things that can be done. But the great thing about these types of properties is that there's pretty much almost unlimited upside potential as far as what you can do. You know, just about anything you can think of doing and putting there, you could probably find a way to make it work and make money with it.
For Beyonder Holding, I mean, are you guys buying these with the intent to like hold them and then refi your investors out in 3 to 5 years and keep them? Or are you guys just kind of flipping these parks?
The idea is to hold them long-term. So yeah, the plan is within about 5 years, about a 5-year hold is what we plan for. We would either one, refi it to pay off the investors at that point, or depending on what's happening in the market, we would sell it on the open market. If it's just going insane, like people are way overpaying for properties at that point, then it makes more sense to sell them open market, then we would do that as well. Whatever's going to get the highest return back for investors. But we do have, we'll tell our investors that we have a guaranteed end buyer. So if nobody else wants to buy it, we still will. And we'll still, you know, do that refi and pay them off. So there's no concern of who's going to buy this in 5 years, you know? That is the goal. Yes.
Have you guys, excuse me, I'm sorry. taken a deal full cycle, or what's the farthest that you've been able to kind of get through the value add phase on some of these parks?
Yeah. So as of now, we have not had any go full cycle just yet. Again, we've only been around for, I guess 2 or 3 years now at this point. It was formed in 2020, bought that first property in 2021. So we only had up to about 2 years now is the longest hold property so far. We are along the path of those CapEx plans on those first few properties. We've got one of our properties we have that we got seller financing on. We're actually in the process right now of doing a cash out refi. So we're going to give some return of capital back to our investors. We're not, refining them out yet, just giving a return of capital back, but still hold the equity in that property for a bit longer. So we're still, this is a relatively still new niche for this type of institutional level investing. So as far as I know, I'm not aware of any group that has had a full cycle RV campground that's gone for investors.
I just wanted to explain for our listeners, you had mentioned how this is kind of like what mobile home parks and self-storage was 5 years ago. Right. It seems like the trend has been these alternative commercial asset classes, like what we're talking about, that were predominantly owned by, when we say mom and pop, we're talking about local investors, people who got into it by accident, or
people not doing it at scale.
Yeah. One property, they self-manage it. And typically there's going to be inefficiencies associated with that type of investor. So then someone like yourself comes in, and then there's a process called consolidation. So, maybe one company begins to buy up 5 or 6 properties instead of just own and operate one. There's some scale behind it. There's some inefficiencies that get worked out. You drive profits in it. And then there's typically an end buyer that wants to purchase that for a lower compressed return than what you would need. And so it drives the price up on it. So that's kind of been the trend in some of these other areas. And that's the trend that you guys are hoping and kind of hedging on that's going to happen with this as well. But if it doesn't, it sounds like you're saying the cash flow's there. So, it's great because it hits those fundamental principles of real estate investing, and you've got exit strategies. And that's the important thing. Well, no matter what type of investment you put yourself into, have exit strategies.
Before we move on to, we're kind of running out of time here, so we need to kind of move on to our smaller pockets. But before we go there, what kind of returns are you guys kind of projecting? If it's in front of people, like we can do a mobile home park or multifamily or an RV resort. I mean, what's really setting you guys apart from everyone else other than the asset class is obviously different. I mean, are the returns generally higher because it's a higher cash flow play?
Yeah. So there's a few things. So first of all, yes. Well, like I said, what attracted me initially to this space is the higher cash flow. So on an average property for an LP investor coming into our deals, they could expect an average of about 12 to 15% cash on cash. Wow. So again, double or triple or more what you're seeing in most multifamily right now. Aside from that, on an average deal, we're looking at about 2.5 to 3x multiples on that same 5-year hold. So much higher end return. Typically, I can't really compare it to other things, but we'll say in most cases you can expect possibly higher depreciation returns even. So this space, you might think, how can you depreciate? It's mostly land, but there are a lot of the infrastructures there, all the roads that connect all the spaces, the RV pads themselves, all the utility connections go to each pad. All those things are on that higher depreciation schedule. We just had a property, we closed on this last December. I'll just give you a quick example. So I had heard of, a different campground, not one of ours, but somebody else's that the previous year had got about 150% depreciation back to the investors. So I knew that there was a possibility of getting over 100%. And of course, we did cost segregation studies on all of our properties. This one we closed in December, actually get back to our investors a 222% depreciation on their K-1. So, basically, for every dollar you put in, you get 222 back in depreciation. Kind of incredible. Yeah. So people are looking for depreciation. This is definitely a place to consider to get that higher depreciation than you're probably getting other things.
Yeah.
Then the other, I'd say the bonus thing on top of all that is compared to, say, self-storage or multifamily or something, you can actually, as an investor, go to the property and have fun. Play. That's how I use this tagline, invest where you play. You can actually, enjoy it. Have fun with your friends and family, hang out there and talk about how you're invested in this property and then, kind of blow their minds. So that's just an added bonus on top of it that you can actually use the asset.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
That's great. We're going to move into our smaller pocket segment. So, Don, why don't you go ahead and tell us what has been your most challenging real estate deal, or what's been kind of maybe a deal that flopped for you? What went wrong? And then what did you learn from it?
I've had, you know, unfortunately, I've had a few. I'll use a maybe a personal one, not dealing with Beyond or anything else, but my third deal, I guess you'd call it. So, you know, about that first fourplex, got a couple more fourplexes. I got involved with this land flip opportunity. So I was able to get this land with the idea we're going to flip it and make a bunch of money on it. So I got it secured. So first of all, I was the broker in the area. Well, first of all, the broker I used for that, for those fourplexes, this was, you know, out of state, and I've never actually been there in person. out of state, bought these fourplexes. And then she said, "Hey, I've got this other friend of mine, this other broker that's got this land, this you know, zoned commercial land that's they're selling like dirt cheap off market. You know, I'm buying some of the lots. Pinch me buying lots. You can buy some lots here and flip them." I was like, interesting. So I was like, yeah, why not? Let's give it a try. So I got this land tied up, basically. So I got under contract. I knew that I didn't have the cash to do it. So I was like, I'm going to try and find a partner. And again, if I can make it work, great. If I can't, well, you know, at least I tried. So I got it under contract. No earnest money. So again, I had nothing to lose, at least trying. I was able to secure a partner, somebody that is in the area. So I got like a boots on the ground guy that knows the area, knows what's happening, just to get him to agree with what's happening in the area, to see, okay, yeah, there is value here in this land.
Right.
And he had connections to, he's a house flipper in the area. So he had connections to private money to bring in the cash to do it. So I was like, great, you know, he can bring the money. So we'll split it three ways. And so I brought the deal. He's got the connections, can bring the money through his other guy, the investor himself. We planned to just do a private loan from him, but he wanted to be part of the deal too, because he saw it as a great potential value. So I'm like, I'm fine with putting it three ways. I don't care. I've got no money in the deal. Right. It's fine with me. So we bought this in 2019. The idea was to hold it for 1 year to you know, get it as a long-term capital gain, but not a short-term gain. But of course, in 2020, the COVID crisis happened, and we weren't able to sell it. So we decided, okay, we're going to hold on to it for another year or so and kind of see what happens. So so we bought this property, this lot for, you know, $650,000, like 2.2 acres. The idea was that there's a whole bunch of growth that's happening in this area right around it. Like, this is about to explode. A new exit from the interstate that's going to come right by that area, and a bunch of growth, new high school building built, a huge assisted living center being built right next door. So all the things were pointing to, this is a great potential property to double or more in value. So as the year went on, of course, during COVID, we held on for another year. Things were still kind of slow, not really happening much. Had to wait a little bit longer. We finally, you know, put it up, listing it for sale for $1.5 million was the intended value we put on it. We thought, okay, great, this is going to sell pretty quickly, you know, but in the end, it didn't yet. So we kind of held that for a bit longer, kind of lowered the price a bit. Unfortunately, still today have that property for sale. We've now relisted it with a different broker at a lower price. Hoping it'll still sell.
What's it down to?
We're at $950 right now. So far it's not worked out as it planned or intended. At this point, my intention is at least get the money back to pay the guy that brought the money, if nothing else, make sure he gets paid back. But luckily, you know, he's been very patient and not like upset about it. He's just like, well, you know, it is what it is. Wow.
at least you guys were all just partnered on it three way. You know what I mean? Everyone's like, well, I guess we'll just all part. It's really, honestly, it's probably saved your butt a little bit that you all partnered on it and it wasn't like a loan that you had to pay back.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been worse now at this point.
Wow. The way it's gone. So what'd you learn from that?
Well, what I learned from this was one, I think we overly trusted the broker a bit too much, saying what it'd be worth, what's happening in the area, what's going on, me not knowing the area at all. But again, that's why I did have the boots on the ground guy that I could trust, that he knows the area and that he saw the value there too. So I wasn't completely off my mark on that one, I guess. But it was probably one of those things where, you know, most likely I should just not even got involved. I don't know anything about land flipping. I should just kind of let it pass and miss the opportunity, just you know, maybe regret not taking a chance.
Yeah, it's kind of like that fear of missing out. You're kind of like, oh,
right.
Someone's saying there's an opportunity and I didn't want to miss out and kind of jumped in before you know, it wasn't your expertise. So
right. And come to find out later that the broker that we used to buy it, of course, that we listed it with originally, found out he's actually not even a commercial broker. So he does all the commercial stuff. He's built commercial property and stuff, but found out later from the broker we are using now that she said, yeah, he's not even a commercial broker. So I don't even know where he had it listed this whole time. He supposedly had it listed for sale, but we couldn't find it on any website. I didn't know what he was doing. So we kind of felt like we may have just trusted him a bit too much as well. We should have moved on a lot sooner to somebody else that that can possibly move it quicker, you know. But
oh man, well, hey, listen, I appreciate the goal of that is not to beat people up over their stories. You know, it's if you invest in real estate long enough, you're going. It's not a matter of if, it's when you have a story of something that didn't work out. And that's really what sets apart people who succeed or don't succeed is your ability to move forward and press on, learn from it, grow. But hey, listen, we're going to go right to our closing remarks here. Don, what's been one of the greatest resources in your real estate investing career?
I'd say in the last few years, what really has ramped up everything to get involved with the build to rent stuff, the Beyonder Holdings, everything was just the networking component. You know, previous all the things I did first, the first couple of fourplex and whatnot, and it was all kind of just my own, you know, what I could find on my own, do my own, working with the brokers, and that's it. It wasn't until I became active on social media, started going to networking events and getting to meet people and talk about real estate and talk about commercial real estate in particular and syndications. That's when things really started to ramp up. And I had more opportunities brought my way, had more connections come my way. All of this be from just networking and talking to people. Even though for me, again, that was a challenging thing because I'm very much an introvert. It was I had to kind of force myself to break out of that shell and talk to people. But I knew that if I didn't do it, nothing's going to change. I'm just going to still keep doing the same thing I'm doing. But I wanted to get to where I wanted to go. I've got to push myself beyond my boundaries and make things happen.
The results that you're getting are perfectly suited for the habits that you have today. It's like one of those hard realities that we all have to kind of grapple with if we want to see change in our life. But that's great, man. So where can people find out about Beyonder Holdings and what you guys are doing in the resort park space?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you can also visit our website, beyondercamp.com. So not Beyonder Holdings. You know, it's just Beyonder Camp is our campground management company, which is separate from the investment side, but now combined is where we have Beyonder Holdings. But you can go there. If you go to beyondercamp.com, you can still go to the holdings tab and find what we're doing there. Or you can still go to our old website, Happy Camper Capital still works. You can still get there from that to see the investment side of things and what we're doing, get access to our portal, see our past deals, our current opportunities, our webinars, and learn a lot more. And of course, you can connect with me directly through there as well. Find the About Us tab, and you know my link is on there to set up a call or find me on LinkedIn. I'm active there just about every day posting something, and happy to talk to anybody about it.
Awesome, man. Hey, thank you for your time today. We'll put all those things in the show notes. And thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
As always, excited that you joined us on another episode of the Reinvest Podcast. If this episode added to your tool belt or left you feeling inspired, go ahead and share it with a friend. Stay tuned every Tuesday for new episodes. And if you want to get in touch with us, go to our LinkedIn or Facebook profiles and shoot us a message. Move farther, reach higher, and grow deeper. See you next time.